and the committee for having me. And they kept telling me how this place was, and I never did believe them, and sure enough, they were wrong. This is pretty, I hate to admit it. I really hate to admit this, but we don't have this Nexus. I thought we had everything and a little more of everything than anybody else, but we do not have this. And you just can't describe this to anybody. They just have to see it. But I really do thank you for having me here so far. Father Hillary came by after the meeting this afternoon and said, remember, there's no competition here. You'll just have to go ahead and tell the same old story and try to get your check for expenses before you talk. And when they send an abbot to do that, you know you're in trouble. Especially if you're a Southern Baptist. But I am Jim Williams, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am not supposed to be an alcoholic. See, I am supposed to be a Southern Baptist. The one that prays for y'all. The one that tries to help y'all get in. We're the ones that's going to be there first, you know. And we're concerned about y'all. My God, the Catholics drink. Episcopalians, of course, they just got tired of being Catholics. The Presbyterians knew it was going to happen. And, of course, the Methodists, they're just afraid of water. So. And I won't give you any more theology tonight. We'll save the rest of it for next time. But I was raised in a dry county, which means they don't sell it, buy it, or drink it, or associate with anybody that does. And I was raised in that Southern Baptist church, so I'd be in there first. And nothing was going to happen, except I was just going to be a good Southern Baptist, grow right on up, never sin or do nothing. And I was going to get saved, and then I was just going to be okay. And that's what happened, until I got to be about 13. When I took my inventory, I detected it started at 5, but didn't really get into the real part till I was 13. And I went to school that day and got around this girl and got those funny feelings. And I told them about it. They said, we've been meaning to talk to you. See, I knew they had. You know, it's not like AA. AA sees a guy. And they said, well, saw old Carl lay in the ditch last night. If he lives, we'll get him. And this bunch, they look at you, and they see that gleam in your eye. God, he's thinking it. They point at you. If you think it, you might as well have done it. I was thinking it. I didn't even know what it was, but I knew I was thinking it. So I told them about those funny feelings. They said, see, we've been praying for you. I knew they had. You know that we've been talking about you. Yeah, I knew it. And they said, you meet us before the service. And I met them before the service. And the only problem I was having is they always talked about those people that were doing those things. And I wasn't too sure, even though I didn't know what there was, I might want to do it. And I thought if you joined up with them, you know, I could do it. And they, sure enough, they talked me into it. And sure enough, it's kind of like AA, except don't give out any chips. They sing that last stanza for that one right back there. Point at you, you know. And your throat hurts. And then you come down the aisle, and then they hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are. And you know you're not, but hell, I liked it. Then they throw you in the tank, and handkerchief leaks, you choke a little, but hell, you come out okay. Went to school the next day, saw that girl, came right back. I said, well, we're going to have to do it again. Didn't take. They said, no, you just don't do it. But they didn't know, I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know if they could just say, don't do that. They didn't do it anymore. I said, how do you don't do it? Don't think about it. I said, I wonder why I didn't think about that. I thought, well, it's only 2 o'clock. I'll just go ahead and think about it the rest of the day. Then when I get up tomorrow, I'll never think about it again. Got up next day and thought about it more than I ever thought about it before in my life. I had no idea that I'm the kind of guy, when I start not to do something, I'm going to do it more than I ever did before. And when I start not to think about it, I'm never going to think about anything else. I used to try to wake up and not think about it. I was doing good until I waked up. Well, 30 miles away was the town that's wild and wicked. I finally got out of high school. I had to go to summer school to get out of high school. I don't know what was wrong. I guess I was just busy. And I heard about this town 30 miles away, and this guy and I on Saturday, that's before he did things during the week, we took a bath and everything on Saturday then, and we got in the car, I went over there and opened the door of that honky-tonk. My God, walked in there. There was that deacon with warm girl in one hand and a cold beer in the other. I said, my God, let's get out of here. He'll tell Jesus on us. And we didn't even get to do it. You know, if you get caught before you do it, you ought to really just give it up. This guy said, well, he can't tell anybody, but I knew he had a better shot than I did. However, he was happier than I'd ever seen him. And I liked the girl he was with on Saturday night a lot better than the one he was with on Sunday morning. I always thought that deacon was just sad, because he looked sad every Sunday morning. Now I know, hell, he's just tired. Had 2 beers. Nothing happened. Didn't taste good, smell good, feel good. I was glad to get out of there. Then the next Sunday, the next morning, I was going to go to church, first time in my life. I thought, maybe you get old enough, you won't have to go. There he was, sad like he always was. Then I had my first spiritual awakening. Maybe you can do it a little bit and just don't tell anybody. God, I couldn't wait to get to my buddy, and I said, next Saturday, it was big town, had 2 joints, we're going to the joint. Couldn't wait for next Saturday to come. Went in that joint, learned how to do everything but commit adultery. But I didn't know anything about it much, you know. I just heard about it. So I learned how to drink. I didn't even know I knew how. You just drink one beer right after the other. Get to feeling it's good, you can't feel it all. Learned how to dance, fall out of the dance floor, broke my nose. After I learned how to do it, I did it 5 other times. Blacked out, waked up next morning, threw up, just like I was supposed to. This guy called, said, how do you feel? I said, oh, I feel fantastic. I'm just have the most horrible feeling I ever had in my life. He said, oh, but you had a great time. I said, oh, well. Then I knew how to have a good time. Just go out and get drunk, black out, wake up the next morning, throw up, didn't know you had a good time. Never did know you could drink it any other way. I thought people who drank just didn't, who people just messed around with a drink and a half and ice, didn't drink. I thought when you went to have a beer, you just stayed as long as you could stay. And when you went to have a drink, you drank as far as you could go. I went past as far as you could go. I went when I wasn't even going, I was going. And I didn't know you drank it any other way. I did not know. Well, I still wanted to be wanted, and I wasn't wanted enough, and I wasn't fitting in. My folks would say, Jimmy would never want to do that. Yeah, I did too. Already done it once and getting ready to do it again. Then they'd say, Jimmy wants to do that. No, I didn't either. So I already knew I wasn't fitting in anywhere. Never could get anybody to like me enough. And I'd go places I didn't want to go so they'd like me. They didn't like me. Finally, I went by the post office, and there was a sign out there and said, we need you. I thought, God, I finally found somebody needs me. I went in there. They needed me. Signed up. My God, I was already 18, practically grown. Signed up with them. We were going to California, so they sent me to Dallas, and I ended up in San Antonio. I should have known then. They didn't know exactly what they were doing. They got up in the dark. wanted to make their bed real quick. I never could understand that. They wanted you to get up and make your bed real quick. I'd make my bed real quick. Then they'd run down to eat and throw up. And it hadn't even gotten daylight yet. Then they're all scared to death because we walked in groups. Whoever ran my bunch decided we ought to go to China. I don't know why they decided we ought to go to China. And since we were in the Air Force, we went by boat. I think they flew the Navy over. Had a lot of Marines on the ship. Then we finally get over there. There's a lot of Chinese over there. They really have more Chinese than they've got anything. They just really raise Chinese. They're into it heavy. They're just into raising Chinese. Don't raise a lot of rice. Not a lot of trees. They just raise Chinese. Well, after you're over there about 3 weeks, you've seen all the Chinese you want to see. You know, you could just really get enough of Chinese after about 3 or 4 weeks. And I told them, I'm ready to go home. And they stayed 2 years. Finally, somebody did something and dropped a bomb somewhere. We came home by boat. I don't know whether they left the planes there or not. They were there when we left. And there weren't any planes on our boat. Then I got back and everybody's going to school. My God, I can't go to school. Couldn't get out of school and went to school. My folks said, sure, you've got to go to school. Why have you got to go to school? Because everybody's going to school. If you do not have that piece of paper, you will not be able to get a job. I proved my folks wrong. I got that piece of paper. I did not learn one single thing that would benefit me or any other human being. You know what I like about you and I? We'll go to any length, even if it destroys us, just to be right. A lot of people won't do that. A lot of people will say, you know, I may be wrong about that. Not you and I. There's only one time that you and I'll ever make that statement, and that's when we're damn sure we're right. Well, I was very disappointed when I got out of school. I didn't mind so much working part-time. Now you're supposed to go to work full-time. And where I worked, always wanted me to come to work on Mondays. A lot of times I had the flu a lot on Mondays. I would always get in bad shape Saturday and try to slide through Sunday to get ready to go into Monday. Sometimes I'd slip on through Monday. And I was having some minor difficulties with women. If you put 10 pretty girls up there, I'll get the sick one every time. I don't know where I learned how to do that. I'd see some guy just go with any girl. Isn't that pitiful? You're not supposed to go with a girl that you can't, that's not beautiful, and one that you can take home with you, and one that you're in love with. God, you can't just do that. Baptists have to be in love before they can do anything. Don't you know that? The only thing that's awkward about being the way I am is when you're in love with no girl, you know. My romances were so fantastic. Take me about a couple of months to find them. And then when you did, take about 2 months. We'd be so much in love, I'd almost have to quit work. I thought AA was the most fantastic place I'd ever seen in my life. It's the first time in my life I had ever seen the sick women grouped. And they told me to come in with an open mind, so I liked both kinds. The one that got sick doing it, and the ones that got sick watching them do it. having some difficulty where I worked. It seems as though you know that it's our responsibility where the companies are doing things wrong. It's necessary for us to let them know about it and to see that they get it right. And you and I cannot stand it. We cannot. There's no use in our getting an ulcer over it. We have got to get it changed. Even though they own it, they think they're supposed to run it the way they think they're supposed to run it. I even have businesses today still operating doing it wrong. Took me a long time to notice I was always the one that was leaving. Finally got out of a job and couldn't get one. The way I'd look for jobs, I'd get up every morning and throw up and spray. And then I'd go fill out one of those forms that asked you very personal questions like, where have you worked the last 10 years? Hell, it's none of their business. They even want to know where you've lived the last 10 years. Then the other blanks, you've got to figure out, wonder what they would like for me to say. And you don't know them real well, so hell, it takes another hour to fill it out. Then 15 minutes, and you get the interview, then go out and get drunk. And I did that one day at a time. Finally, I saved my one guy that I knew they had an opening, and I knew they needed somebody. So I went to save this, went down there. When I got there, I could tell this guy was really like to tell me something, but he just didn't know how to do it. And he said, you don't want this job. Yeah, I want the job. I need the job. I got to have a job. Been out of a job. You don't want this job. Everybody knew what I didn't want, and it was always the opposite of what I wanted. I also knew he was going to be more comfortable when I left. So I just left, went out, got drunk, waked up next morning. I said, you know, I've been doing this about 10 days. I think I'll just take the day off. So I went out to the golf course and ate an old egg, an old piece of toast, went around to the beer joint next to the golf course where my last friend advisor worked. And he said, God, you look horrible this morning. I said, yeah, I think I'm coming down with something. He said, the way you're vibrating, I think you need a beer. And I said, oh, my God, not now. I never drink before noon, which is 10:30 for Baptists. He said, my God, the way you're vibrating, I don't think it makes any difference. So I drank half that beer and sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying if I don't lose my concentration. When you start thinking about women or something and it gets in your nose and burns, and you've got to drink the rest of the day to get the pain away. And I already knew how to meditate. I do not meditate that closely anymore. It was when just me, God, and the commode. And you say, oh, God. And it's stringy. And you don't know where the end is. And you can't breathe and get it back. So you don't know whether you're going or staying. They ought to use that commode stuff for this energy crisis, even in a hot summertime. You know, after a deep meditation, it's tiring. And after I'd get through, I'd lean over there, and that would be just as cool. Try it tonight. I told this guy, I said, I think I better go home and lie down. I love to lie down. I didn't get to use these vibrators, these motels, for 2 years after I was sober, because I could just vibrate all by myself. And I like to have meetings with me. I call on hospitals, and I used to get in the car, and I'd say, God, I hate to go to that old big old hospital. Hard time, you can't hardly ever find a parking place. When you do, you got to get that kit, carry it down through that lobby, down the basement, back there where that first agent is. You know what kind of guy he is. Hell, he ain't going to buy anything anyway. See, you don't even have to stop. You just drive right on by. Wait till 10:30, go into the beer joint, and said, have a good day. Nah, didn't buy nothing again today. Went home and got in the living room, got all of me's together, and we decided that we'd commit suicide. And those guys that didn't hire me would worry about it for the rest of their days. They'd see in the Houston Chronicle Jimmy Williams commit suicide. They'll never be able to get over it. They'll worry about it for the rest of their life. But I didn't know how to do it. Now, you don't even have to go to school or nothing anymore. I see it on TV all the time. Suicide. Call that number. Probably email you pamphlets. Overdose is even popular now. We didn't even have it when I was old cold turkey school, where you had to be sound in mind and body to commit suicide. You know, if you do the overdose deal, you'll just remember the pump. And I remember all three of my suicides. I didn't like guns because I don't like noise of the morning, and they splatter all over everything. Razor blades were popular then, but I didn't know how to do it. I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. You get blood all over the carpet. I'm always thinking of others. I went to the bathroom and got my razor blades. I had sense enough to know, even though I hadn't done it before, I had sense enough to know if you cut the left wrist and don't cut the right wrist, you'll be half dead and half alive. And I said, then you might back out. It'd be too late. So I cut both wrists so I'd bleed evenly. And I'm sitting there listening to the drip, thinking about those guys going to worry about it for the rest of their days. And the phone rang. Then I thought, what if where I'm going, I'll always wonder who that was called. That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I put a Band-Aid on my wrist right quick. Answered the phone. It was the police. They said, where were you last night? I said, I was right here. They said, no, you wasn't. I said, how do you know? They said, we was there. Then I didn't want to talk to them anymore. I'd already learned, don't ever talk to anybody knows more about where you've been than you do. I said, what do you want me to do? You know, policemen have a personality change. I've never seen one of them yet, didn't they? You know, they stop you and say, come go along with me. In that sweet tone. And I'll say, I can't go. Then they start to get all upset. I said, my God, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I've got to get home. Then they go nuts, and you have to pass by them and go along with them. This guy said, well, you can either come down here, or we'll come out there and get you. I said, I'll be right there. He said, if I were you, I'd pick up an attorney on the way. I said, well, that'll take me another 30 minutes, so you'll have to wait on me, but I'm coming. Then I hung up the phone. God, I love to live with me. I can live a week in a half a day. I've had a hell of a day. I've got to call an emergency meeting. I've already had 2 big meetings, committed suicide, threw up out the golf course, and it's only 11 o'clock. So I had a meeting about those 2 options that guy gave me. And I checked my finances, and I had $36 left, which before inflation was plenty to start a new career. And I decided, I don't think I like either one of those options. I think I'll just leave town. They've been treating me pretty bad anyway. So I just got all my clothes, had a quilt, and had one piece of furniture, a lamp. And I had enough room in there for me. I put the lamp on the top. I guess I was going to carry the light as soon as I found the plug. Put the old lampshade up there, and then got in the car and mailed the key to the folks that owned the place. And I took off. Got me a pint of whiskey in case anything happened. Waked up the next morning about 200 miles away and had $7. And I said, wonder how my folks are getting along. It's amazing when you can just have such a burning desire to see your folks. And I called and they said, where are you going? I said, oh, I'm just out riding around. Well, why don't you just come by here and have a cup of coffee? I'll believe we'll. I never shortchange my folks. I always give them my very finest story. They're not going to get their money back. In fact, when I got to listening to the story I was telling them, it was so horrible, hell, I cried with them. I said, my God, if I'd known it was that bad, I'd left Houston 3 years earlier. And old John said, well, Jimmy's honest. Let him have 100. God, with 107, you could almost go into business. Well, when I got in the car, I, of course, had to have a good meeting. I did. I knew I had to sweat out that night. So the next morning I got up and says, well, Aunt Lee, I just wanted to tell you, there's one little thing I left out. When I was having all that trouble down there, I'd been drinking some. But I decided last night, I'm never going to drink again as long as I live. You're never going to have to worry about me getting into any of those traps like I was in down there ever again. I said, I think I'll go to the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. That's the end, you know. I didn't know that, but that is the end. In fact, you almost run out of ground before you get there. And they change country down there. They have a little creek, change countries. I knew a guy that went down there about 5 years ago and don't call. He won't let you come, you know. So I've got about 60 miles out of Fort Worth. I said, how far is it to Waco? And they said, 79 miles. Just happened to sell beer. And I said, well, let me have three. I just stopped for gas. But beer's not really drinking anyway. And besides, it's a new day. I end up down there, and it took me about 3 weeks. I was beautiful, had all my stuff with me, and it was obvious. And I moved into the downtown hotel, beautiful old hotel, just kind of a relic looking, antique type. And I never took my clothes up there because I knew I'd be leaving soon. So I go down there every morning and get me a pair of shorts, socks, shirt, go upstairs, go through the lobby, up the elevator, take a bath, and go. Knew I'd be leaving any day. And it was obvious I didn't have to go back and get anything if they hired me. Well, they'll hire you down there because nobody goes through down there. If you're breathing, there's an outside shot, they'll hire you. People go down there, the snow dodgers go down there in the wintertime, or people go through there going to Mexico and fishing and stuff. Well, they hired me. And for some reason, I could always not get drunk. I'd just get drunk. And I'd work 7 days a week till I got up into my place. Sometimes the guy would be in my place, and I'd have to explain to them they've got the wrong man in there. And after they understood it, of course, this particular time, they had to let him go. And when I explained it to them, and then I got my job, and then when I did, in my place, it was one of those days when you had to go rest a little bit before you got drunk. Sometimes you just can't just run out there and get drunk. You're so tired, you got to rest a few minutes. So I went home to my garage apartment. Old, faded green garage apartment. I had green places in. And then this manager came by and said, you know, I think we ought to get acquainted. I said, I think so, too. He said, why don't we go have a beer? I said, oh, yeah, one. He was a drunk, just like me. I lasted there for 8 years. I thought I had it made, till he got fired and let me down. I'm still trying to get married. And I've decided being true to one woman is not it. Because when I'd be in love and we'd finally almost kill each other and have to leave each other, there I was out hunting again for 6 weeks trying to find one and in love. So I said, what I need is one and a spare. you don't get to court a lot anyway when you're busy like I am. You call them about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon and said, I'll pick you up about 7:30. Fine. Might be 4 or 5 days before you get by there. So you don't get too close to anybody when you're drinking, like I am. This one, though, is a little different sick than the sickies I'd been used to. I'd never had one that tried to abuse me physically before. You know, I understand when you need to tell each other what they are and be thorough. But don't touch her. This girl took advantage of me a couple of times when my equilibrium was off. So one night, my weekends went like this. I worked 5.5 days a week, and I got off on Saturdays. And I'd take off the golf course, have a heavy lunch like a cheese cracker and a six-pack. And then I'd get drunk and be blacked out by 6:30. Home, sleep, wake up about 10:30, get up, go to this joint, they'd close it at 1, then you slip on over to Madame Morris and come back at daylight. Then drink beer the rest of the day to try to smooth things out so you could be prepared to go to work Monday. Sometimes you missed it, but hell, I tried it a lot. This particular time, I traded off with a guy, and I'm up at 11 o'clock on Friday night. I'm supposed to be in bed by 9, and there I am up, and I'm over at her house. And being an honest type person like we are, I just said, you know, I think I'll drive by and see this other girl on the way home. You know, I'm just hospitable type of guy anyway. And for some reason, I said, but I want to go to the bathroom first. For some reason, she didn't like that. And she followed me in there. She couldn't even wait till I went to the bathroom to discuss it. That's a bad place to have a meeting. there's not any soft surfaces there. I don't remember the discussion because it was blackout time. And I'm living in an old faded green trailer at this time. I'm coming up in the world. In an alley behind a motel. I had a rock yard a long time before they started putting them in. I'd see those old weeds, stringy weeds come up there, and I'd say, you'll never make it. And I'm laying there asleep like I'm supposed to be on Saturday morning, this Saturday morning, and something goes, whip! God, I jumped up, looked down, had my clothes on. I said, oh, my God, I bet I was going somewhere early this morning. Opened the door, and looked down her white shirt and had some blood. Blood makes me sick, you know. I said, God, open that door and there's that 6'4", 240-pound Baptist preacher. Come go along with me. I said, preacher, I cannot make it. I cannot make it. I know I look like I'm ready, but I'm not ready. I can't go. I don't know where it is, but I've forgotten about the meeting and I'm just not ready. He said, get in the car. God, I'm in total fright. See, I'm already learning how to wake up in total fright in my own bed, let alone out on the streets. And God, I got in that car and I'm in total fright. And I said, preacher, I'm going to have a beer. I'm not going to be able to make it. I know I look okay, but I'm not going to be able to make it. And I'm going to tell you the truth. I really didn't dress this morning. I was dressed earlier. And I said, I was dozing off, and there I was. And I've got to have a beer. I just got to have one right now. He said, there'll be no drinking before the meeting. God. We drove up front of her house, so I assumed he's going to be there. And my head felt like it was skinned and had knots on it. God, it was just like somebody had hit me in the head with a hammer. I looked at my car, and it was parked funny, but it didn't look like it had been in a wreck. We went in there and opened the door, and there she was. She did look like she might have fallen in a bush or something. And I said, I've got to go to the bathroom. And I looked in that mirror, and I'm going to tell you something. She won. I'll never know the truth. I think what happened, when we had that meeting in that little room, probably I lost my equilibrium, fell in that bathtub, and she stepped on me. 2 weeks later, we got married. We got married in the First Baptist Church, so it worked. And we got married at 10 o'clock in the morning, so there'd be no drinking before the funeral, the ceremony. And I told her, I said, now, since you've been married before, and I'm pure, you know, there's no use in our inviting anybody. But I'm up again on Friday night, 11 o'clock. So I start calling people until 3. So I'm there, vibrating, waiting for the ceremony to go. And my beer distributor friend walked up to me and said, I want to tell you something. You called me at 3:15 this morning. We're not here to see you get married. We're here because we don't believe it. And the longest bet on your marriage is 3 weeks. But I showed them. I hung it in there for 8 years. But my life changed. I had no idea how nice it was to get up and throw up in peace. I was always going to quit smoking because it made me gag up morning. So I'd grab those cigarettes and that coffee and go in that bathroom door and lock that door, and she'd tell me what I was through that door. I'd have to get upset, go out and make the living, get drunk, come home, tell her what she was. We did that one day at a time. The only good day we ever had, we were both just too tired. I went back to that preacher and I said, preacher, this thing is not working. He said, you know what's wrong with y'all? You're missing the beauty of life. I said, yeah. He said, did you know that the fruit trees are in bloom? I said, no. He said, why don't you go get your wife? Get in the car. Drive up the valley. Smell the aroma. And look at the beautiful blossoms. I said, yeah. Jumped in the car, went home, opened the door, and said, get in the car. He said, what for? I said, we're going to go look at the blossoms. He said, the blossoms? I said, yeah, we're missing the whole damn thing. She gets in the car, we go over to the hop shop, get a 6-pack of beer, drive up the valley. I see a sign that said 14 miles to Matamoros, went to Matamoros, switched tequila, blacked out, missed the whole damn thing. Lost that job, couldn't get one, could not get a job over 2 months and was going stark raving crazy. And finally, a guy who I had been drunk with many, many times managed a drug company, and he hired me. And it took him about 3 weeks to send me to West Texas. Now, I'm going to tell you something, folks. West Texas is different. They've got little trees out there about that high. You can see California on a clear day. They sent me to a little town that had 536 people, and 36 of them were making a living. And I joined the 500. And I'm supposed to hold a pad like this and a pen here and write, and you can't do that. There's no, even if I could spell oreomycin, standing in those drugstores, I could not do it. And that pharmacist says, "My God, man, you look like you're going to fly apart." I said, "Any minute." He said, "Well, take some of these." This was before Valium. I understand Valium, both eyes cross and you walk straight. This was just Librium. A little black and green, two-tone green stuff, you know. And I took two of them. I'm used to things happening when I take something. I'm used to some burning, something going on. Nothing went on. Hell, I waited 15, 20 seconds. Nothing happened. So I took three more. Then my knee just went, "Huh." Said, "My God, I know how to weave. Now I've got to find me a new stance." So I took Librium in the daytime and drank beer at night. Sometimes the pharmacists say, "Jim, I'm a little short of tens. 25 is okay." "Be fine." All the same size, just different color. Take 6, 7, 10s, take 6, 7, 25. Did not make a bit of difference. And then I always had one decision to make every night. After the third beer, I'd say, "Shall I close the joint or go home early?" If I decided to go home early, got me a pint of whiskey, put it on top of that Librium, those three beers, went home just right, blacked out. I miss driving drunk some. You know, right before blackout time? And my stripe always went to the right. I always wanted to ask somebody, just especially a left-hander, maybe his went to the left. And nobody ever told me, but just close that left eye. God told me, I guess. And sure enough, stripe comes back, and you're riding along there, and water's coming down, it's burning a little, and you do that. And you said, "Oh, there's two taillights up. I think I'd like some more." So I'd get eight, turn your light on. I miss that now. When you drive at night now, it's just boring. You just got to stay awake. Finally, got a guy recommended me for a job, and they hired me for no reason whatsoever. And I don't know how we don't get jobs and get jobs, but that's the way I got that job for no reason. President of the company says, "We don't even know why you're here." Well, I didn't either, so I couldn't help him. Well, for the lack of not knowing what the hell we was doing, he hired me. And I'm back in Houston. And we were setting up battle, so we had to have two holders now because things were getting worse. We were fortunate, though, because we had finally developed such a deep hate for one another, we were safe, because the one that died first won. Day before Christmas Eve of 1965, I played golf with these people. They had some of their in-laws in from Oklahoma and all this thing, and we played golf, and I got a little bit too hospitable. And I forgot to eat my sandwich, and got to make sure they did, and I took some beer with us, and we played golf, and I went to their house and blacked out. And drove from one side of Houston to the other, blacked out, which is nothing new for me. Waked up the next morning in total fright, just like I'm supposed to. Looked out there to see if my car was back. It was, and I even quit asking it how it got back. It never told me, you know. Walk around it, no new fenders beat up, or no new blood or anything. Then I'd always call back and say, "Sure am sorry about last night. I wasn't sorry about last night. I just wanted them to tell me what I did." They never tell you. They'd say, "Jim, it was okay. You just got drunk." Drunk was getting to be a bad word with me. Alcoholic would have been fine. Nobody ever called me an alcoholic. Called me a drunk. Didn't like it. Well, old What's-Her-Name had gone next door. I don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not an alcoholic. The only alcoholic I know is the one that's got the wine bottle sleeping in the alley behind the grocery store. Never got in the alley. Never got behind a grocery store. Didn't want to go to sleep downtown. Always got out of town before I went to sleep. And I knew one alcoholic, and that one I knew when I was a kid drank wine and bay rum. Never drank bay rum. But I guess I heard it on the radio. And I looked up in the phone book under Alcoholics Anonymous and called Intergroup. And this girl acted like she was glad I called. I should have known then I had the wrong number. She said, somebody be right out. Well, I waited an hour. 10:15, looked in the icebox, had three beers. I said, well, I'll just call them back and tell them I don't need them. It's Christmas Eve anyway. About that time he called and said, I'll be right there. Before I could tell him I didn't need him, he hung up. I thought, I'll just get rid of him. He came by himself. He and his wife had managed these apartments when we moved in. And they used to watch me going back and forth from the 7-Eleven saying, if he lives, we'll get him. I looked out that door and here that little deacon-looking guy coming, little short, pointed nose, book under his arm. I said, oh, my God. We're going to read that book and pray. I've not only been baptized, I've been rededicated 10 times. I said, I'll just get rid of him. We didn't read the book. We didn't pray. I have no idea what he said. About that time, old what's-her-name came back in, and he said, you want to go with me? Well, I didn't, but it's better than staying with her. Got in the car with him and hit that old 610 loop in Houston doing 50 miles an hour, and I'm in total fright. Good God, I've gone off with a perfect stranger. I know better to go off with someone who I do not know. Should have taken my own car, and I go into total fright. And total fright with no light, I just can't make it. I said, I'll wait 15, 20 seconds. I'll buy a beer.
I don't want a beer.
I waited about 20 more seconds. I said, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to have to let me out on top of this freeway or take me down there. I've got to have a beer. I've got to have it right now. I got bad drunk last night, and I'm going nuts right now, and I've got to have a beer. And besides that, it's 11:20. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? Oh, yeah, I can do that. I can handle the fright if I've got the light. And drove and drove and drove over kind of a bad neighborhood. In front of this old house. I said, this it? He said, yeah. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. Walked in there and some of the deacons were sitting over there talking about women in the stock market, and I found out later on they didn't know anything about either one. Had an old bar back there in the back, and the bartender didn't look a hell of a lot better than I did. And this is a program of attraction, you know. And this little short guy walked up to him and said, mix him up a little milk and honey. I said, my God. What do you put in it? I never drank anything like that in my life. He said, well, you see, you're nervous. I said, hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And besides all that, you're used to sugar in your system from alcohol. And the honey's already been digested. I said, indigestion is not my problem. God, if you throw up right, you don't have indigestion. Well, I drank it, and it curdled, came right back up. He said, don't worry about it. We have plenty. I said, hell, I guess I'm going to put on a show for these folks. One of the smart ones said, walk all you want to. Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. I sat there and say, talk, laugh. Well, we've got a new animal in here today. Watch you walk, 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 walk. Drink that sweet, 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 six, 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 sweet, six, sweet. God, I can almost taste it now. God, hell, I haven't had a piece of chocolate pie in 15 years. Finally, about 4:30, this guy said, well, I guess we better go home. I said, yeah. Let me out a couple of blocks before we get to the apartment. I've got to slip in there and get my car. I knew I had to get some bourbon to cut that sweet taste. Beer would not do it. He said, don't drink anything. I'm going to pick you up in an hour. I said, what for? He said, we're going to a meeting.
I said, where?
Right back where we came from. Said, my God, we were there all day. I said, well, just let me out the apartment. Here he came, and back over there we went. It's kind of a funny bunch. I saw a few of them hugging and kissing. Most of them didn't look like this too damn happy to be there either. They started out with a funny little old prayer. Some girl got up and talked 3 or 4 hours. They said it's only 30 minutes, but I bet it's 3 hours if it's a minute. And they just laughed and went a damn thing funny. And then some guy got up and talked for an hour or two, and it wasn't nothing funny. And they just laughed. I said, this bunch is crazy. Then they all got up, held hands, said the Lord's Prayer. My God, the Holy Spirit moved into that bunch. Every one of them started talking at the same time. Nobody listened. I said, I wonder how he did that. They didn't lay any hands, sing any songs. They didn't do nothing. Bump, here it goes. I'm standing over there with the only deacon that nobody likes. Then I saw the deal. Men and women getting together, laughing and talking. Hell, they're all happy now. They're the ones that were sad's happy. And they're all going out and they're getting in those cars. I knew what they're doing. Hell, I have to get in here and get in there and get invited to this deal, go over and have a little drink and talk about this damn thing. Night after night, nobody invited us. I'm with the only deacon nobody likes. One night, just raining. I said, call me, so I pick you up in 30 minutes. It's raining. Did you ever go get a drink when it's raining? I'll be ready. One night, old what's-her-name's out of town. So I just pulled down all the shade, turned out all the lights, had nothing on but the TV set. That old phone just ring, let it ring. Next morning, he called and said, where were you last night? I said, I was right here watching television, enjoyed every damn minute up, may do it again tonight. He said, well, you missed it. I said, what did I miss? He said, I don't know. I said, wasn't you there? He said, yeah. But I only heard what I was supposed to hear. We'll never know what it was you were supposed to hear. Said, my God, you got to go every night. You'll miss it. I went 3 months, got drunk, 3 months, got drunk, 3 months, got drunk, and then I sobered up on my own. And I had a meeting with me, and I decided the only thing that's wrong with me is I've always been underfinanced. And all I need to do is get financed, and I can leave everybody, including her. So I'm going to go back and officially resign and tell them I do not need them anymore, but I appreciate everything. And evidently, I'd called him about 3 in the morning. I don't believe it, but he said I did. So before I could tell him I was going to resign, he could save this whole thing if they could ever keep their mouth shut. He walked up to me and said, don't you ever call me again. I said, God, I'm glad you said that. I never called you in the first place. They called you. And I'm going to tell you something that your best friends will not tell you. We don't get invited anywhere. And they don't know me, so it's got to be you. And if I had as bad a personality as you did, I'd go back to drinking. And you don't ever have to worry about it again. I'll never call you again as long as I live. And I didn't till the next morning. He said, meet me at the club. He said, now, we're going to give you a decision to make. He said, you've got to give an alcoholic a decision to make. He said, I'm going to tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Alateen, Alitant, and Al-A-Dog. There's absolutely no failure here. Must not, will not, cannot, absolutely cannot fail. Provided you do exactly what we tell you to do, the way we tell you to do it. So now there's only one thing that you're going to get to do for the rest of your days. But you're the only one that gets to do it. Beginning today, If you don't give an alcoholic a decision to make, they'll flounder on the same subject for years. So we're going to give you a decision to make today. And if you're going to make this decision every day for the rest of your life, you get to decide whether you're going to go our way of life or your way of life. Now, you can either decide to go our way of life or go right back out that door. I said, I don't want to do either one. He said, I didn't ask you what you wanted to do. I asked you what you were going to do. I said, do you mean tell me you don't care whether I want to or not? He said, not at all. The group does not care? Not a bit. I said, well, if you'll make it perfectly clear to the group that I don't want to do it, then I'll do it. He said, well, first of all, we've got to get some things straight. It's your thinking that's wrong. I said, how much of my thinking's wrong? We always start with all of it. And if there's any good, we'll let you know. I said, you put a sign up there on the wall that says, think, think, think. And he said, that's for us. Says, now we're going to give you some things not to do and some things to do. The things we're going to give you not to do is going to change. And the things we're going to give you to do, you just add to, and then it's going to happen over here. I said, what's going to happen over there? We don't know, but it always happens. I said, you know, I've been listening to you for over 9 months. You've never listened to me. And I'm going to tell you up through this minute, every single thing I've seen, heard, or said, I want to tell you right now, do not understand. He said, and that's it, and don't you ever forget it. He said, there's two things that you must remember for the rest of your days. No matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Then you'll have understanding. And then when you quit trying to understand, you'll enjoy it. And the other thing is, no matter what your situation is, it's never the situation, it's never her, it's never them, and it's never God. It's you that must become different. You must become different than you have ever been before. I said, how do I do that? He said, oh, you can't. I said, what the hell did you tell me for then? He said, that's what's going to happen to you. He said, now I'm going to tell you the kicker. This is the one thing that got you here. But it's also the one thing that if it does not become different, will keep you from getting all the things that God has for His children. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, and begin to know you don't know, then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy. He said, I know. Said, now, first of all, said, you don't know how to not do anything. We're going to learn how to not drink or take a pill. You know that card I gave you that has my name and number and four other men, no women, on mine? When you get squirrely, you call one of those numbers. I don't care when it is. Definitely before you take a drink or a pill, you call that number. Now, if you don't do it, and gut it through it, don't even drink. You didn't do it. Call that number, no matter when it is. And that's the way we're going to learn how to not do something. And this is what we're going to do every day. In the morning, first thing, get down on your knees, say these words and these words only. God, take me today. Let me be what you want me to be. Let thy will only be done in my life. Help me to definitely not take a drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug. Amen. Do not need to tell God what He has not done, nor what He needs to do. God's highly capable of handling that all by Himself. And then call me before you go to the bathroom. I said, why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. I said, do you mean to tell me that you don't think I've got sense enough to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't give you a lot of credit here, you know. Before I got down on my knees, I said, God, you know, I've been praying to you all my life. And you and I know he don't know. Hell, he's a Presbyterian. But I'm going to do it just exactly like they say to do it, God, so when you and I get through with this bunch, we can tell them to take this program and shut it. Got down on my knees, and I said that prayer, picked up that phone, made sure I need to go to the bathroom. He didn't even ask where I need to go. He said, meet me at the club. I made the club, and he said, now go to work. I said, I hate my job. He said, what's that got to do with it? I said, well, I hated it so much I couldn't go to work yesterday. He said, what'd you do, sit in that chair and think? I said, well, till noon, and I went to the club. He said, well, you don't know how to go to work. I said, how? Go get in the car. If you'll write this down, you can catch it. Then he said, besides, that prayer that you say every morning, when you get in the car, invite God into the day. I said, how do you do that? He said, you say, God, I invite you into the day. Oh, write that down until you get it. You don't lose your notes. So then I went to work, and I came back to the club. You know how they are. Sit down, Sonny. Listen to us. Don't say nothing. Then out loud before everybody, it's time for you to go home and eat supper and come back. I know to do that, but they got to tell you. They got to tell you. This is their little baby, you know, their show. Come back to the meeting. He said, after me, he says, now go home, get on your knees by the side of the bed, and thank God for the day. I said, I do not thank God for the day. It's been a miserable damn day. I hate her, and I hate you, and I hate AA, and I hate God, and I hate everything. He said, remember, what you think has nothing whatsoever to do with it. It's only the action that you're taking that's going to make you different, and the action you're taking is never for any particular thing to happen, because the action you're taking is totally a mystery to what you're doing. So you can never take action for some specific to happen, because when you take the action, the thing that needs to happen, you have no idea what it is, and it usually happens so whatever you want to happen may not even need to happen. So I understood that, so I didn't have to mess with that. I said, do you mean to tell me that you think I am going to go home and be a hypocrite, talk to God when I'm not sincere? And he said, yeah, it's only the action you're doing anyway. I said, you mean to tell me that God does not care whether I mean it or not? He said, not at all. I said, you don't care? No. The group doesn't care? No. Well, I got in the car, went home, closed the door, so what's-his-name couldn't get in there. Got down on my knees and said, okay, by God, God, thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. Well, if he don't care and they don't care and God don't care, hell, I don't care. Did that for about 2 months. And one morning, I didn't do anything different that morning, did any other morning. I'm driving that old 610 loop about 915 above Memorial Drive, and this God that I had never known as my friend moved into that car with me. And for the first time in my life, I knew something different than I had ever known it before. I knew that I would never need to take another drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug as long as I live, unless I myself insisted upon it. I knew it. God stayed with me all that day. I thought the rest of my life's going to be just like this. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I thought, man, I'm going to get me a tent and some tambourines, and we're going to go save some souls. God, I get back to the club early. He's 15 minutes late, and he walks through that door and says, get your coffee and sit down. And they don't like it when it's coming back. They just like to give it up. But he did, and he sat down. I knew this was going to make me the leader. And when I told him, he grinned a little and said, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are sicker than others. I said, what are you going to do about old what's-her-name? He said, most people to get to AA married right. They still both got to change or they don't make it. A lot of people maybe shouldn't be married at all. We use nobody but the master counselor only. We don't use anybody else. We have a way for you to find out everything you need to know about you, about marriage, about relationships, and everything. But I'm not messing with my marriage. My wife and I are leaving it just like it is. But I'll send you to a guy who's got his all worked out. And he sent me to an Episcopalian. You know they don't know. They left the Catholic Church just a bit. You know they don't know. I went over there and talked to that guy. He said, "What do you want?" I said, "I'm going to tell you something. I have not been sleeping with old what's-her-name, and they have not let me sleep with several girls that I have been in love with since I've been in AA. I've been praying for someone to take her off, and they wouldn't, old what's-her-name." And said, "I'm going to find out if I can become a man who can have a relationship with one woman, and if I can't, I'm going to go back and do my thing." He said, "You remember when you got to Alcoholics Anonymous and you didn't fit in AA and you didn't fit back out there?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "If you're willing to go through that lonesome walk in every area of your life, I'll not only guarantee your relationship with a woman, I'll guarantee your relationship with your fellow man that you could never have believed. And I'll give you a bonus on top of that. I'll guarantee your relationship with God that you could never have dreamed of." I said, "I don't believe that." He said, "Isn't that fantastic?" I said, "What do you mean?" "You don't need to." I said, "Do you mean, Tim, I don't have to believe?" And he said, "Not at all. Just do what we tell you not to do and to do. And what you think will have nothing to do with it. What you want will have nothing to do with it." He said, "You're still married, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, but she sleeps in there, I sleep in there." He said, "Well, we'll just start with her." He said, "You do not know how to live with another human being. So we got to learn. We'll just practice with her. You're never going to tell her what's wrong with her ever again." I said, "Who's going to tell her?" He said, "I don't know, but you're not. And you're never going to do anything with friends, children, or anybody else to work her around to get her to do what you want her to do." I said, "Never." He said, "Never." "And you're going to pray for her." And I said, "I'm not." "You pray for her." He said, "Yes, you are. And you're going to say these words. You're going to say them many, many times a day. In the beginning, God, thy will be done for her as well as for me. Take our relationship, let it become what you want it to be, and show me the truth." I said, "I did not want God's will to be done for her as well as for me." He said, "Remember, what you want has nothing to do with it." Well, I started doing it. We couldn't have a conversation at all. She waited for me to tell her, and I never did tell her, so she had no answer. And then I told him, I said, "She ought to go to Al-Anon." He says, "We take care of that." Al-Anon, I want to go on record, if they're taping this on tape, and give you any time you need any help, call me. I love you dearly and truly. She went to you, and she found you depressing. Whatever you're doing, keep it up. If you ever need any help, call me. I'm on your side. Well, after I started not doing things and doing things, what was wrong with me, that old lovelust thing surfaced, and God, I couldn't get rid of it. Thomas sponsored, couldn't get rid of it. And finally, I told the group. One of the girls in the group said, "You're not supposed to tell that in the group." So I went over and told another group. And one of them snitched on me. You know, we don't gossip here, we're just concerned. And my sponsor came to me and said, "Oh, what's her name's out of town?" And said, "Usually when you stop doing something, God will change it. But that's not happening to you. She's out of town. You go home and get in that apartment, and don't you come out of there. Don't call anybody until you and God get that taken care of. We're sick and tired of hearing about that thing you got and that old deal with what's her name." Went in there and locked that door and got out on my knees and prayed and cried all day long, and finally went to sleep about 11, 12 o'clock at night. Next morning, waked up. It was not there. For the first time in my life, whatever that thing was I had was not there. Then I knew for the first time in my life I'd become capable of having a relationship with one woman. They were so smart, I didn't tell them about it for 4 nights. Then after the meeting on the 4th night on the way to ice cream, I said, well, I guess I might as well tell you. He said, we knew it the first night. I said, why didn't you tell me? He said, you need to know you're always going to be the last to know. I said, why is that? He said, we don't know. Wasn't too long after that that we used the same lawyer and got our divorce. And they wouldn't let me go with anybody yet. I'm having brain damage, you know. Doing nothing sober. So then finally, I was associated with this girl. They'd already said that no matter when you start being associated with somebody over a long period of time, you establish one thing. Make sure that they know that you're working on a lifestyle that has God ahead of all areas of your life. So when we talked about God and work, and I went to AA, that's all they let me do. I could think all I wanted to. But I had to work, go to AA. Finally, this thing began to develop. It looked like this girl, I called her in the hospital, took her to a convention. I got some new type funny feelings. And I told them about it, called my sponsor, and I finally said, before I do, maybe I better tell her. So I went to her and I said, I'm going to have to see you in your office. I think there's a possibility I could be falling in love with you, but there's nothing I can do about it because my sponsor will not let me have an affair. That looks funny coming from a 43-year-old gray-headed man. And then I knew I'd blown it, so I said, well, I might as well tell you everything. I know you're a Southern Baptist, and I may ruin our business relationship, but I'm an alcoholic. I go to AA every single night, twice on Saturdays and Sundays. I do two things in my life, work and go to AA. That's all I can do. She said, well, what's it all about? Well, I don't know. We cry in meetings because we smoke burns our eyes. And we smoke faster so it'll burn more. And we cuss and cry and pray, and then we can't understand why we can't sleep at night. We've only had 15 cups of coffee. I said, well, I guess I'll have to call my sponsor. So I called him. He said, what have you been doing? I said, I ain't done nothing. He said, bring her over here. I said, well, you'll have to go see my sponsor. She looks funny, but she goes. We go over there, and he had an Episcopal bookstore. We went in the next little eating place, and he said, sit over there, Sonny. We'll handle this. My God, talked to her for an hour and a half. I thought, hell, I believe he's going with her. Then finally said, well, it looks like God's going to do something for you. I said, well, I know what to do now. Just sign old Tom's name at the motel. I can get him going. I've just been on caution for 2 years. He said, no, remember our deal. Our deal was we're going to have God, AA, and Al-Anon in that home or there'll be no home. She had a bad marriage, but no alcohol, knows nothing about Al-Anon, so she goes to Al-Anon, and if she likes it, fine. If she doesn't, no show. God. I had to tell her how to go to Al-Anon. I said, go in there and tell them your name's Eloise. Don't tell them another damn thing. I said, they get smart, tell them you're thinking about marrying an alcoholic. Then don't tell them nothing else. They spent 3 meetings why she should not marry an alcoholic. And then I took her across town and she heard the gal alcoholic talk that night. And she heard the program Alcoholics Anonymous. And she went back to her Al-Anon group, said, you've got a program here and I want it. And you converted that Southern Baptist, thanks to you. And, you know, Baptists and Catholics have the hardest time finding God, but once they do, they're good, you know. And I have that relationship that only God, A, and Al-Anon gives one man and one woman. And it's totally free. And we do have God, A, and Al-Anon living in our home. She had 3 children. The oldest one was a Southern, the one they like, Baptist minister. The one that gets them saved and gets some more. He'll never be without work. And he had a daughter and a wife, and he had heard that his mother was probably on drugs and had married an alcoholic. Well, we didn't have to see him for about 3 years. And he finally came around, and finally took him about 10 years to come around. And now we keep that daughter 1 month out of every year. Unknowing to him, she's been to one AA conference. And the first time she spent that summer with us, she got on the plane to go back and said, "Nana, this is the best time I've ever had in my life." You don't think I like that, do you? Then the middle son is probably going to be one of us. He's sleeping with an apartment and a mattress. And he's got his divorce like you're supposed to. And he has a platonic girlfriend that they sleep together on occasions. And Eloise has suggested he might be drinking too much, and he said he wasn't, so we're clear there. Fortunately, we did not have to go fix that, but we know he knows where we go, so he knows if he... Last time I saw him, he was drinking. I said, "Drink crazy today. They're trying to make winos out of everybody." I don't know who you are. He was drinking light beer and Boone's Farm wine. God there, and says, just like soda pop. And that they go to the bathroom all the time. I said, "God, if you just dump that wine, put a little bourbon in with that beer, you can get here quicker," but you can't tell them, you know. Daughter had a bad romance right when Eloise and I married. She ends up with an old, dirty, bearded, dirty-haired, pot-smoking boy who's going to liberate that Southern Baptist. Well, after Al-Anon and Eloise handled that, my God, I could have helped them handle it a little faster, you know, but didn't let me. So then finally, they clean up after Eloise gets her gone from the house. And she goes to work, puts that cat through school, and now they've got two beautiful little granddaughters, and the older one really thinks I'm okay. She and I are in love. We make love on the phone. We go eat corn dogs together. And the little one I'm letting Eloise have until she gets to about a year older. And we have some of the most fantastic Christmases. And that girl, when I first knew her, was a beautiful 5'7" blue-eyed blonde, but a personality like that wall over there before they painted it. And now she's an absolute delight to be around and just a beautiful mother. They're having a little bit of marital difficulties. It just happened about 3 months ago. We found out they had it all the time. We would like to go fix that, but we're going to have to let God take care of that. You know, I'm glad I know some things about you and I. And I'm so glad I know you and I are going to get to know. We're not going to miss it. I'm glad I know that you and I were God's special chosen children. And I'm glad I know that today. Haven't known it too long, but I'm glad I know it. I'm glad I know that God chose you and I don't know why. Just know He did. I don't know about anybody else, but I know about you and I. I know that God chose us to be His, and that He's the one that came here just for us. We're the ones He came for. We're the ones He got sick. We're the ones He loves. Probably chose us before we were born. But we're here, and you didn't get to AA. You didn't get to Al-Anon. You had no idea that you were having to get out there every day, have car wrecks, go to jail, don't miss a night, you'll get here late. Go to all that trouble, to go through all that misery for only one purpose. God was sending you to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. You got to get ready to get ready. God had to let you get... Who took care of you and I? God had us in the palm of His hands, just letting us get prepared to do and be remade and redone by Almighty God Himself. Otherwise, you and I would not do it. But He put us in a position to where we became helpless, willing to call the phone to go to a place we've never been. And a place we have no idea what they have nor what they do. Did you know that it wouldn't make any difference if you had been to 100 different denominations and 1,000 different churches? Nothing was going to happen different in your life or mine until you and I were sent by God to be together. You see, it was you I had to be with.
no one else. God sent you and I to be together. I don't know why we seem to want to know where we're going. We didn't know where we were going when we got here. Had no idea. The only thing you and I were doing was getting prepared. That's all. The accomplishments and the failures were for only one purpose. To prepare you and I to be redone by God Himself. We were going to have to get the flaws out of us, and nobody is going to go through the rock crusher unless they get properly prepared. And you and I were prepared, and the moment we got prepared, God plucks us out and sets us in the group of people we've been looking for all of our lives. For one purpose only, to fulfill His purpose for His children. And as He remakes you and I, we receive all the blessings that God has for His children. A lot of times I don't like it, but I like it when I get through the valley and in the place. I like it after I get through the rock crusher. But remember, you're the one. You know, we won some battles. They let us win, but we lost a game for one purpose only, for God Himself. And now you and I get to make the stand that His people must make, stand in the situation what we're in, so He can change us in that situation. And as He changes us, our situation changes, and it works no other way. Here we are, in the place that you cannot get ahead of one another. You cannot learn it, memorize it, nor teach it. It has to be experienced. And God is our only teacher. But what's so funny about that is, we don't listen to anybody else anyway. Nobody could ever tell us anything, nor can they today. Only God Himself. But now that you and I are together, He can remake us into what He created us to be in the beginning and give us all those sweet things that He has for His precious children, which is you and I. Did not make a mistake when He made you and me, and He didn't make us for nothing. I'm glad I know that today. I'm glad I know the only thing I didn't know was that God really did love me. And if I'd have known that, I wouldn't have had to come. But I'm glad I didn't know that, because I wouldn't have known you. And you see, we have that one ingredient that only God's special children have. The one that has all that power, that gives us that sweet power that wins the game, even though we lose a few battles. We've won the game. It's just living it out. And look who we're with, you and I. God's chosen people is who I live with. And it never fails us when we call one another, when we meet together and invite Him into our day and into our situation. He never fails. Just like it's been right here this week. Just like it is right now. As we have that power that's so sweet and so great. Like right now. When I can feel you loving me and me loving you. Thank you very much.